From Washington, this is VOA News. I'm Victor Beatty reporting. Russia plans to host a Syrian peace congress to press a diplomatic solution to the nearly seven-year conflict. Turkey and Iran have pledged to take part. The leaders of the three countries met Wednesday in Sochi, 2 days after President Vladimir Putin hosted Syrian leader Bashar al-Assad there. Mr. Putin said they agreed to enter what he called a real political process of settlement and assist in post-war reconstruction. A date for the meeting hasn't been set, but University of Denver International Affairs professor Jonathan Edelman said the participants are hardly examples of good governance.
Iran is an authoritarian, radically Islamic state. Russia used to be a communist state, and now it's very authoritarian. And unfortunately, Turkey, which used to be under Kemal Atatürk and his successors, moving towards some version of democracy and some version of capitalism, is also moving in the wrong direction. So if these are the winners, then problems are going to continue to mount in the Middle East.
The next round of UN-sponsored Geneva peace talks is scheduled to get underway November 28. In Saudi Arabia, members of the opposition reportedly will demand Mr. Assad's ouster in any post-war transition. Ousted Zimbabwe Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa is back in the country, preparing to be sworn in as president, following Tuesday's resignation of longtime ruler Robert Mugabe. He addressed thousands of supporters.
The people have spoken. You yourself said, if the people say I must step down, you shall comply. This is the time to comply.
Mnangagwa said, we are witnessing the beginning of a new and unfolding democracy. His dismissal 2 weeks ago triggered a military takeover, leading to Mr. Mugabe's resignation. This is VOA News. 22 years after the worst post-war European atrocity, the UN Yugoslav War Crimes Tribunal ruled Wednesday that former Bosnian Serb Army leader Ratko Mladic was guilty of genocide, war crimes, and crimes against humanity. They referred to the massacre of thousands of Muslim men and boys in Srebrenica, as well as the siege of Sarajevo. Mladic was sentenced to life in prison. He had to be removed from the courtroom in The Hague for angrily shouting rejection of the proceedings. Darko Mladic, his son, spoke for his father.
He said, this is all a lie. This is not a court. This is a NATO commission. And that they are trying to criminalize legal endeavor of Serbian people in some times of civil war to protect itself from the aggression.
UN Human Rights Chief Zayed Raad Al Hussein praised the court's decision as a momentous victory for justice. The U.S. called on the people in the Balkans to work together for a better future. The Argentine Navy acknowledged Wednesday the week-long search for a submarine in the South Atlantic has reached a critical phase, as the crew of 44 will likely be running out of oxygen. Navy spokesman Enrique Balbi said the matter of oxygen is a critical situation and the concern is rising. Dozens of planes and ships from several countries, including the U.S., are involved in a search and rescue effort for the ARA San Juan. The Saudi-led coalition fighting Houthi rebels in Yemen said it will reopen the country's main international airport and a vital Red Sea port to humanitarian traffic starting Thursday. Jamie McGoldrick is the UN resident coordinator for Yemen.
We're asking the Saudis to open the port of Hodeidah and Salif that allows us to bring in the humanitarian cargo we need to feed people and to medically support them in that regard. We're also asking for the Sana'a airport to be opened for the humanitarian flights to allow vaccines to come in, but at the same time to allow humanitarian workers to come and go, both for the UN flights and the NGO flights.
The coalition closed Yemen's entry points earlier this month after a ballistic missile was fired from rebel-held territory. The closures were aimed at cutting off weapons shipments. Palestinian factions meeting in Cairo have agreed to hold elections by the end of next year, following October's reconciliation agreement between Hamas and Fatah. A date for voting will be left up to Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas. A Pakistani court has ordered the release from house arrest of Hafiz Saeed, accused of masterminding attacks on the Indian financial capital Mumbai in 2008 that killed nearly 170 people. Saeed has repeatedly denied involvement in the attack. The U.S. has designated him a terrorist and offered a multi-million-dollar bounty. On Wall Street Wednesday, trading was thin ahead of the two-day Thanksgiving holiday weekend. The benchmark Dow Jones average shedding nearly 65 points to close at 23,526. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Mbate in Washington. Today is Thursday, November 23rd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Former Zimbabwe Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa is expected to be sworn in tomorrow, Friday, as president, but last night he thanked Zimbabweans for their support.
The people of Zimbabwe, you who are gathered here to receive me, may I say I thank you for receiving me.
A Zimbabwean analyst says it's likely a transitional government might be formed to deal with the country's collapsing economy. Zambia's president reveals he did offer President Mugabe an asylum in Zambia. And a former Angola ambassador wants former President Eduardo dos Santos prosecuted for crimes committed during his 38-year rule.
If we have to prosecute people in this country, then everybody who has been involved in governance since 1975, you know, everybody has to go through this process so that, you know, the process is fair and just.
Elias Isaac is the country director for the Open Society in Angola. A former U.S. ambassador to Liberia says she's disappointed by ongoing legal challenges to Liberia's October 10 presidential election results. And a new research says oil spills in Nigeria double the risk of infant mortality. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Former Zimbabwe Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa is expected to be sworn in tomorrow, Friday, as president. Mnangagwa returned to the country Wednesday after spending about 2 weeks in exile. His ascendance follows the resignation Tuesday of longtime President Robert Mugabe. Last night, Mr. Mnangagwa thanked Zimbabweans for their support and prayers during his ordeal, which he said included an attempt to assassinate him.
The people of Zimbabwe, you who are gathered here to receive me, may I say in the name of our Lord, I thank you for receiving me. Exactly 16 days ago, I received a letter firing me from government of the Republic of Zimbabwe as Vice President. Within 2 hours, I was informed about plans to eliminate me. Realizing that on the 12th of August this year, I was subjected to poisoning, which resulted in my being airlifted to South Africa. And again, I thank you, the people of Zimbabwe, for your prayers that I survived that poisoning. This time around, I say to myself, I should not wait for them to eliminate me, but let me go out and with you, the people of Zimbabwe, the people of ZANU-PF, make your voice be heard. Today, I feel so humbled that we have remained here until this hour at our headquarters, waiting for me, that you see me and I see you.
Mr. Mnangagwa also thanked the Zimbabwe Defense Forces under the leadership of General Christian Chiwenga for the smooth manner in which they handled the military intervention. He appealed to all patriotic Zimbabweans to come together to grow their country's crumbling economy.
I pledge myself to be your servant. I appeal to all genuine patriotic Zimbabweans to come together. We work together.
Yes.
No one is more important than the other.
Yes.
All Zimbabweans.
Yes.
Want to grow our economy.
Yes.
We want peace in our country.
Yes.
We want jobs.
Yes.
For us to grow our economy.
Yes.
Mr. Mnangagwa also appealed to the Southern African Development SADC countries, the African Union, and the international community for their cooperation in growing the Zimbabwe economy. A Zimbabwean working with civil society groups inside Zimbabwe says given the country's collapsed economy, it is most likely that ZANU-PF might introduce a constitutional amendment to make possible the formation of a transitional government with key members taken from opposition parties and civil society. Thabang Nari says although elections are scheduled for 2018, and that there are still some outstanding reforms to be made, the transition process should be more of a priority right now to rescue Zimbabwe from its current political and economic crisis.
From what we gather from sources back home, the Congress of ZANU-PF will take place in December. I think it's the second week of December where it's planned. And Mr. Mnangagwa will be confirmed by that Congress as the new president, and they call it the first secretary of ZANU-PF, and the future presidential candidate, I guess. But given the deep economic crisis that we have in Zimbabwe, the thinking is that his party, ZANU-PF, is likely to sponsor a constitutional amendment that will facilitate the setting up of a new inclusive government, a transitional government in Zimbabwe. So the feeling among some quarters is that while the elections are what was supposed to happen, the transition is more of a priority right now, and it will be better to rescue Zimbabwe economically and thereafter set in place the processes that will lead to an election. We know that there are outstanding electoral reforms that are needed. There was a voter registration process that was already currently underway, but if the truth must be told, the country is in an economic crisis, a political crisis, and it is likely that the compromise will be that before we deal with the political crisis.
You said transitional government. Is that going to be with the current opposition parties?
I think the idea is to pick key leaders of the opposition, maybe a few people from business, a working group that will basically work together to rescue Zimbabwe from the current economic quagmire.
In the meantime, what happens now to former President Mugabe? Is he under house arrest and is he going to remain in Zimbabwe?
So there is an inauguration ceremony planned for Friday. Mr. Mnangagwa in his speech said that regional leaders will be attending that inauguration ceremony. And I think it would work in Mr. Mnangagwa's favor if Mr. Mugabe attends that inauguration ceremony and is seen to be handing over power, transferring power from one of the founding fathers of the nation to the new generation, although he was really a compatriot of Mugabe, Mr. Mnangagwa. But I would suppose that after that handover ceremony has taken place, Mr. Mugabe might need to take a break, a holiday, maybe outside the country, so that there is no conflict of interest. You know, they've talked about one center of power. To say in the transition, there might be people who feel attached to Mr. Mugabe and are finding it difficult to let go of him as the president. So in that respect, it might be good for him to take a bit of a short break outside the country. I know he has always expressed this desire that he will die in Zimbabwe. But because of the power dynamics, currently, I think it would be good if he can find a base, whether it's in South Africa, Singapore, where he's got medical treatment in the past, so that the new regime takes over and can put in place whatever rescue package they would like to put in place.
Thabang Nari is a Zimbabwean living in the U.S. city of Dallas, Texas. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barton, Washington. Today is Thursday, November 23rd. Daybreak Africa time is 15 minutes past the hour. A spokesman for Zambian President Edgar Lungu says the Zambian leader offered President Robert Mugabe asylum in Zambia during the standoff between the military and the 93-year-old Mugabe. Presidential spokesman Amos Chanda says Mr. Lungu made the offer last Friday in Luanda, Angola, during a meeting of the Southern African Development Community Defense and Security Committee. Chanda says President Lungu made the offer as part of a regional effort to facilitate a smooth transition in Zimbabwe, but he said President Mugabe turned down the offer.
President Lungu spoke to President Mugabe last Friday at the height of the uncertainty and tensions in Zimbabwe when the military commanders were pushing for him to step down, and there were street protests and tensions were extremely high in Zimbabwean society. The president spoke to President Mugabe and said that in order to facilitate a smooth transition, Zambia was prepared to offer him asylum. President Mugabe flatly declined and said that he did not think that it would get to that point. And the president reassured him that should that need come about, then it should be known that Zambia was always available for him to come to. The decision to offer him asylum was within the spirit of generally the regional leaders, everyone wanted. I think that everyone was desirous of a quick and amicable settlement to the situation. That quick and amicable settlement was premised on the departure of President Mugabe.
By your president offering to harbor President Mugabe, your president was in reality condoning or supporting the military taking over of the country.
No, the president was supporting efforts towards the quick and amicable settlement. The military had intervened and gave a statement that was not a military takeover of government. We gave them a benefit of that. That was not a military takeover because they continued to salute President Mugabe and they continued to remain loyal to him as their commander-in-chief. If government had been taken over by the military, then the resignation yesterday would not have been an issue. The fact that President Mugabe was resigning only yesterday convinces us that there was not a military coup in Zimbabwe. What the president was endorsing was a general view that a more inclusive Zimbabwe was possible, more likely without President Mugabe than him staying at the helm. So the president was simply proposing a win-win situation.
Amos, in what context would the president offer the former Zimbabwe leader a place in Zambia? Is it in the context of an African statesman or the relation your country had with President Mugabe when he was president of Zimbabwe?
The context in which he offered him asylum was if President Mugabe was president, as he was, as you know, on Friday when that offer was given, then President Lungu offers him asylum. You are simply asking him to vacate the seat of president. If he vacates the seat of president, then there will be a quicker and amicable settlement. So it was in the context of adding to efforts to resolve a potentially dangerous situation, because if you have 1.5 million people on the street and you have military tanks on the street, the president understood that probably Zimbabwe would be cooler, would be calmer and more open to everyone without President Mugabe, which is why on Friday, when President Mugabe was still president, an offer of asylum was given.
Thank you very much, Emma. So nice to talk with you.
All right. Thank you very much for this.
Emma Chanda is spokesman for Zambian President Edgar Lungu. He was speaking with me from the capital, Lusaka. The former Angolan ambassador to Tanzania has called for the prosecution of former President Eduardo Dos Santos for crimes committed under his 38-year rule. At a news conference in the capital, Luanda, Ambassador Ambrosio Lukoki accused the former president of hiding behind the leadership of the ruling MPLA party to prevent any possible prosecution. But MPLA supporters, the Ambassador Lukoki, is engaging in a publicity stunt, particularly when he himself was a prominent member of the ruling party during former President Dos Santos' rule. Elias Isaac, country director for the Open Society, tells viewers Peter Clotty that it would be difficult to prosecute the former president at the moment.
I think, you know, these suggestions are very, very serious and are very dangerous. Because if we have to prosecute people in this country, then everybody who has been involved in governance since 1975, you know, everybody has to go through this process so that, you know, the process is fair and just and not just pointing to one person. It's obviously, you know, the former President Dos Santos was the head of state, but he was not ruling alone. He's not the only one, you know, involved in direct abuse of human rights violations, police brutality, and so on. As a member of the ruling party, he knows what he's talking about. And this should be dealt with within the ruling party. And it's very unfortunate that he's making public statements as such, while he has the right forums for him to do so.
Some of his supporters are saying he's right to air them out because the Constitution guarantees him freedom of speech. But do you think people in MPLA share similar thoughts?
I believe that within the ruling party, there are people who have the same views, but, you know, they cannot express them openly. Because this has been the trend, you know, most of the politicians, while they're still serving in the political party ranks, you know, they don't speak out until they come out. This is very serious and very tricky. Even those people may have similar views within the ruling party, they'll not be able to speak out because, you know, they're bound by the party rules.
Based on the fact that the current president, Lourenco, is close with former President Dos Santos, do you think there's even a remote chance that he would make a move and have the legal structures prosecute former President Eduardo Dos Santos like it's been suggested by Ambassador Lukoki?
You know, it will be very, very difficult. You know, there are very serious steps that President João Lourenco has to take. And I believe that it's too soon for him to make any steps, you know, towards President Dos Santos. Because President Dos Santos currently is the president of the ruling party, and the President João Lourenco, the president of the state, is the vice president in the party. So that creates, you know, an ambiguity, you know, in terms of power, you know, sharing and how the country is being governed. So if that will happen, it's not going to happen today, because President Dos Santos has been ruling this country for 38 years, and he has created structures and systems that are still in place, in which the new president, you know, is trying to build or to dismantle, you know, some of the pieces so that finds, you know, his own way to govern this country. So it will not happen soon.
Elias Isaac is a country director for the Open Society in Angola. He spoke with viewers Peter Clotty from the capital, Luanda. The former U.S. ambassador to Liberia, Linda Thomas-Greenfield, has defended a statement put out earlier this month by the U.S. embassy in Liberia, expressing confidence in the integrity of the October 10th elections. In that statement, the embassy stressed the importance of a peaceful transfer of power to a democratically elected president in January next year, in line with Liberia's constitution. Some Liberians criticized the statement as an interference in the internal affairs of Liberia. Some even suggested that the embassy might have released the statement without the blessing of Washington. Ambassador Thomas Greenfield says U.S. embassies do not normally need Washington's approval to issue such statements. She also says she's disappointed by ongoing legal challenges to Liberia's October 10th presidential election results.
I saw Liberia go through 14 years of civil war. I participated in the election that elected Ellen Johnson Sirleaf in 2006, and it was an extraordinary experience watching the people of Liberia show that they didn't want to fight anymore and they were going to use their power of the vote. And so they did that again on October 10. 70% of them voted, and now their votes are being challenged. And I'm not saying the election was perfect. I think there were some issues, but none that changed the results of this election. So I'm hopeful that the Supreme Court and the National Election Commission will resolve this issue so that the people of Liberia can vote for their next president.
As I mentioned, you serve as an ambassador, but you're also a very dear friend of Liberia. You're a friend of President Sirleaf also. Now, people were complaining saying that one of the reasons for the challenge was that she interfered with the electoral process. What, do you have any comment on that?
You know, I've heard that. I do not believe the president interfered with the electoral process. Did she make mistakes? All leaders make mistakes, so it was probably not a good decision to meet with the magistrates, but I don't think that there was any intention to interfere with the electoral process. And if she did, we still had two top candidates that won. So what did she do that made those election results any different? And I just don't feel that way. And I know Liberians will say it's because we're friends. I'm friends with all Liberians.
So you said that whoever is elected president should be able to build on the legacy of President Sirleaf or maybe correct whatever error she may have made. What do you think is her legacy?
You know, I did an op-ed piece for allafrica.com, and I talked about her legacy. Her legacy of consolidating Liberia's peace, bringing respect to Liberia from the rest of the world, making Liberia a player internationally, and bringing development. There is a new turbine that I was there to cut the ribbon on in last year in December at Mount Coffee. So I think there are a lot of areas where Liberians can be proud of their president, and they need to be proud of her and move on and start building their own legacy.
I know you're no longer at the State Department and you're no longer the ambassador, but the U.S. Embassy issued a statement about the process that is taking place in Liberia. There was a question here today whether the embassy went rogue. Did they get any instructions from Washington to do that? And some people said no. What do you think?
We hire ambassadors because they're smart. We hire ambassadors because they're leaders. Ambassadors don't have to get approval to issue a statement locally. And so I'm very happy the embassy made the decision to issue that statement.
Finally, do you have any preference, either George Weah or Vice President Joseph Boakai?
I know both of them, and it's going to be the choice of the Liberian people, and whoever the people of Liberia elect as a friend of Liberia and a former ambassador, I will do everything in my power to ensure that that person is successful.
Ambassador, so nice to talk with you.
You as well, and my warm greetings to Liberia.
Thank you very much. Linda Thomas Greenfield is the former U.S. ambassador to Liberia. She spoke with me recently in Washington on the sidelines of a panel discussion about the Liberian elections. Babies are much more likely to die in their first few weeks of life if their mothers live close to the site of an oil spill, according to new research. Scientists studied data on infant mortality and oil spills in Nigeria's Niger Delta region and described their results as shocking. Henry Richwell reports.
It's estimated that 240,000 barrels of crude oil are spilled into the Niger Delta every year. The environmental effects are clear to see. The effect on the people is slowly coming to light. The study by scientists at Switzerland's University of St. Gallen is shocking. Babies born in the Delta are twice as likely to die in the first month of life if their mothers were living close to an oil spill before they became pregnant.
We looked at the birth histories of more than 2,500 Nigerian mothers, and we compared siblings, some conceived before and some conceived after a nearby oil spill.
The researchers compared georeferenced data on 6,600 recent oil spills with results from the 2013 National Demographic and Health Survey. Their results show that even spills that happened 5 years before conception doubled the chances of babies dying after birth. However, spills that happened during pregnancy appear to have little effect.
We think the main reason is that some of the negative health effects are just building up over time. So if you think about these negative health effects, these are due to skin contact with crude oil or to drinking contaminated water or eating contaminated fish or crops, and also inhaling smoke from fires.
It's thought unborn and newborn infants are more vulnerable as they haven't built up natural defences. But the researchers say more clinical work is needed to determine how crude oil affects health. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
That's it for this Thursday, November 23rd edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, I'm James Butt in Washington wishing you a good Thursday.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there. VOA. On weekends, tune into Nightline Africa at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.